Hello and welcome to the Fastest Lap Podcast, helping you to stay up to date with the fast-moving world of Formula One. Today, it's all about the Brazilian GP. What a race! But still, we have one race left to find out who will be the next world champion. My name is Jan, and as ever, I'm with Fergal. Hello everyone! 5 safety cars, 2 red flags, and a lot of broken carbon fiber. I think we've got a lot to talk about this week, and yeah, we were all hoping for a standing start for the Brazilian GP, but Charlie Whiting decided, nope, we have to do a safety car start. Well, I think that was a good sign that we might await something like this, because actually Grosjean didn't even start the race because he managed to crash out on the lap to the grid. Fergal, how do you do that?
Yeah, I was quite embarrassed for him, I think. it was just unfortunate. There was just no grip and there wasn't really much he could do. He just aquaplaned right into the barrier, and yeah, very unfortunate, but I think at the end of the day there was nothing really that he could have done to prevent that.
Yeah,
and actually it's such a shame, because he qualified so well prior to the Grand Prix. You know, I think it was P7 or P8 yeah. He was meant to start the race in, so yeah, that was a real shame for Grosjean.
Yeah, I mean, he said it himself, from hero to zero within one day or something.
Yeah.
It was really a shame for the whole team, and especially for Grosjean, as he hadn't been in a good point scoring position for, I think, a long time, and this race was a big opportunity for them. But yeah, Grosjean wasn't maybe the biggest point of focus this weekend. Of course, it was Hamilton versus Rosberg. Can Rosberg win the championship? Well, he needed to win the race, and before the race we heard stories that actually Toto Wolff called Jos Verstappen about Verstappen not interfering with the championship battle. I mean, how can you call a father of a driver to say something like that? I mean, in the end, I think they said it was some kind of friendly call, but it was a strange story, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was strange. What Toto Wolff said was that he rang in respect to Max, because he didn't want Max's, you know, reputation to be damaged. but like, you know, why should Toto Wolff care what the reputation of Max Verstappen stands for? He definitely wanted Max to stay out of the title battle. And yeah, it was very strange, because it's not really his business, you could say, for Max to put his nose where it shouldn't be, or where it should be, whichever way you want to look at it. And yeah, I don't think Verstappen should, you know, hang back and let them fight it out. He wants to win, so yeah, he should just go for it, I think.
Yeah, just imagine an other team boss calling the father of Lewis Hamilton or something.
Yeah, yeah, I can't imagine that, to be honest.
Yeah. But yeah, eventually, I think at first they even delayed the start. I couldn't understand that either, because I mean, there were no signs that on the radar that the weather would actually improve. did you understand that?
Yeah, it was all just really strange. I mean, people didn't know whether, you know, people were left on the grid confused whether it would be a proper start, or if we'd have a safety car start. Everyone was just wondering, you know, what would happen. And then, yeah, of course, we had the 10-minute
delay.
They were
confused under the tents.
it was all a bit very blurry, I think. They were just hoping that the rain would stop, so that we might have an opportunity for a standing start. But yeah, the rain just got worse, so it didn't help at all.
Yeah, and basically the whole field was just cruising around and cruising very slowly behind the safety car, losing all the tire pressures, tire temperatures, and so on. And yeah, I think
And actually, one thing I don't understand is why do they use the safety car why don't they use a virtual safety car, or at least let the cars keep to a certain delta so that tires can keep, you know, up to temperature, and so that the drivers aren't worried about low temperatures rather than stuck behind the safety car. Why can't they just at least let the leader control the pace? Obviously not at full racing speed, because, you know, like, implement a delta time that they have to stick to, like a virtual safety car, rather than, and let them, let the temperatures go up of the tires, rather than just, you know, letting the temperatures fall away completely, because it doesn't really make any sense in my eyes.
That's actually a really good point. I think even I read it somewhere on Twitter. Was it Mark Webber? I think it was Webber who actually tweeted the same thing. And yeah, it's really a very good idea, and it would benefit everyone, I think. I mean, with the current rules, how they are, it's just basically making it even more unsafe than it is already.
Yeah, of course, it's not really going to make much difference now, because next season, of course, we won't have this thing again. If it's felt too wet to start, the drivers will be led around on a safety car.
But we would still have the problem that the tires are cold. I mean, of course, they will then they will start on cold tires. I mean, that'll be fun.
That'll be fun, yeah. But I think when you're starting in the wet, there's too much. There's already a big problem there, because just so little grip anyway. I'm not sure how much if the cars had started the way they did on Sunday on the puddles and stuff, I don't really know how much difference cold tires would have made to it anyway. But yeah, I do think a virtual safety car, or letting the lead driver control the pace by sticking to a delta time, would work.
Yeah, I think that's definitely something they should look into, because as we said, it didn't make it any better out there. And after what was it,
seven, eight laps, they
released the field. So basically we had 10% of the whole race already done. They released the field, and it was only a matter of time before the first incident happened, and it was Marcus Ericsson who hit the wall on the long main straight, and he crashed the car and parked it in a brilliant place, basically in the entry of the pit lane.
Because I think he actually steered it towards the pit lane.
Yeah, I didn't understand because, it. I mean, he could have maybe thought
he could get his car back, but I mean, like, what could they have done other than, you know, it's not like they were going to repair his car and send him back out on his way again, you know? But,
Well, who knows if there was a red flag?
Very true, yeah.
But I don't think that's a quick repair job.
No, it wasn't. It was a pretty big accident. But, he was on the intermediate tyres, as were a lot of drivers, and that's something I really, really don't understand. I mean, the conditions were clearly, you know, awful. They were so bad.
But it was as always. The safety car comes in, and there are always some cars, and in some cases even half the field, who comes in for intermediates. And we heard some comments of the drivers that the full wet tires are just not suitable for racing. And it was quite interesting. Even though the conditions were really bad, the intermediate tires were not that far off. Of course, they had bigger aquaplaning and so on, but I think
they held up pretty much in the first and the second sector. They were okay, but then in the third sector, they completely dropped off. There was no grip at all, and I'm pretty sure every single crash happened in the third sector that race. So,
yeah, because that's also the area where Grosjean crashed. So basically that was the most dangerous part, where it went uphill and the water came down in rivers.
It's raining down,
basically. And so he blocked the pit lane. Verstappen just missed him. That was actually pretty scary. And then they closed the pit lane, and I don't know what happened then. Ricardo decided to pit as well, also for intermediate tires.
Yeah, I don't think he got the call that the pit lane had been closed by the time he came in. Verstappen obviously got away with it. He was in before the call came. But unfortunately for Ricciardo, it didn't quite go that way. And yeah, like you said, it was very scary when Ericsson was parked on the pit lane entrance, and then you see a Red Bull going flying into the pit lane. That was, and you didn't see the immediate aftermath.
Yeah.
So I was kind of just waiting to see if there was another huge collision. But yeah, luckily they got through. They got through okay. And Christian Horner tried to say that Ricciardo could have a tire puncture.
Yeah.
And that's why he came in. I think at that point they knew that Ricciardo was going to get penalised. But I'm actually quite surprised about, you know, it was just a 5 second penalty. It wasn't really, that much, I don't think.
Yeah, I think the stewards even said that it was just some kind of the circumstances with all the visibility, bad visibility, and everything happening so quick that they only decided to give him a 5 second penalty. Under normal circumstances, they would go for a higher penalty. And what was quite interesting, I thought, was, of course, in Brazil, you don't really have the pit entry light where you could easily see it. It was somewhere on the outside of the straight. Did you see it?
No, actually, I didn't see that. No,
it was basically like some kind of those yellow LED lights for virtual safety car, yellow flags, and so on. So basically, the LED flag system. And that was just one thing at the pit entry, and basically it was blinking red. And I mean, with all the spray going on, I think it was quite difficult to see really for Ricciardo.
Yeah, probably. Yeah, 5 seconds. I mean, I guess in the whole, you know, while you're in that situation when there's so much to be dealing with, I guess they probably just wanted to get it out of the way quickly and just gave them 5 seconds.
So, and then, I think the safety car went around again, and we had a restart, and yeah, it was not the day of the Iceman, because he's not a rain man.
No, not at all.
Basically, he managed to spin off in a straight line.
Yeah, and again, it just backs up how bad the conditions were. He just aquaplaned in a straight line.
Did you actually see a few meters behind Verstappen on the intermediate tires? Nearly lost it as well.
Yeah, seen that. So that could have been a very, very big accident, because not only would you have one crash car on the start finish straight, you'd have two, probably blocking the whole track. So that was a pretty big crash when he ended up in the wall, and I think the rest of the drivers were quite lucky, especially Ocon, who just about avoided Raikkonen.
Yeah, that was a very, very quick reaction. I mean, I saw a GIF file where you just see nothing, only spray, and suddenly there's a red car.
Yeah, and
good that it was a red car. Just imagine it was a Mercedes or something, which is gray as the rain. That would have been terrifying.
Yeah, it would have been. But what's even more impressive, actually, about Ocon's reaction, on a dry track, it's hard enough to pull the car to get out of the other car's way. But in the wet, when there's so little grip, he had to pull the car out of the way and not spin the car out. So, yeah, fair play to Ocon.
Yeah, and it didn't end too good for Hülkenberg. Well, you could say it ended good, as it only hit something of his car and not him. But yeah, basically he hit the front wing of Kimi, and that ripped his front wing off. And after that, the race was obviously red flagged. And when they showed his rear wing, his front wing in the pit lane, he suddenly had some Santander sponsors.
Yeah. Yeah, I didn't hear that they got new sponsors, but it was actually quite scary seeing Hülkenberg run over the front wing, because it just shot across the track. Luckily it kept on ground level and it didn't get launched into the air and into the crowd, because he went over it pretty quick.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, in general, we really have to say that it was basically a good outcome for everyone. No one injured in that incident, and only one car that had really to end the race in that situation. Because after that, of course, with the red flag, Force India was allowed to change the front wing, and yeah, drivers were out of the car. Rosberg was eating a banana or something, and everyone was talking. I mean, I did some league racing, really 100% races, and for me, I mean, we had some red flag situation, and it was so difficult to keep to keep concentrating and stay in the zone, and I just cannot understand how they can get out of the car, joke around, talk with their engineers and so on. I mean, it must be really quite hard to keep your body and mind up to everything that is required.
Yeah, but that's the pedigree of the Grand Prix drivers, and that's what they're expected to do. They're expected to be able to not only have raw speed and talent, but they're also expected to be able to endure situations like that and long races like that one. I see Singapore as more of an endurance race rather than anything else, because when you're sitting there in the cockpit for nearly 2 hours in 50 degrees, it's torturing, I'd imagine.
And it's quite bumpy.
Yeah, exactly. So I think that level of focus and concentration is expected, to stay with the drivers no matter what happens during the race, because, it's if you lose focus like that, you're not going to have a good restart and a good result at the end of the race.
Yeah, as you say, that's what is expected from them. And generally, I think those laps where they actually ran and raced, it really showed how brave they are and everything Formula One should be about, them going in those very difficult decisions, overtaking and really trying everything, going having a big oversteer moments on the straight and so on. I mean we really want to see those things, drivers controlling the car and so on, and then they put the red flag on it again. I mean, it was this time for a good reason with the Raikkonen crash, but obviously they kept the red flag out for a very long time. And actually, was it during the first red flag or was it only during the second? But the fans started booing because it wasn't, or they kept the red flag out for a very, very long time.
Yeah, and actually, I want to go back to something you said there a minute ago about the drivers being brave. I think every motorsport driver, of course, has to be brave. But since, and this is going to be quite a sensitive topic, but since the Jules Bianchi accident, I think the last time I remember a race being red flagged due to weather conditions, I think was Japan 2014, although I could be wrong. I don't remember before that anyway. I was kind of sitting there and I was sort of, it was all the stuff was happening in the Grand Prix, but in the back of my mind, I was just remembering that race and what happened during that race. And I think ever since that happened, the stewards and the race director have been much more, aware of what can happen and want to avoid something like that again. Even if it comes at the expense of a good show. So I think they did have safety in mind when they were bringing out the red flags and calling the race off. And in that respect, I think it was a pretty good decision because of what happened before.
Yeah, I think you might be right about that, because also I heard somewhere that still there's some pretty big legal threats from the Bianchi family. And I'm not quite sure who takes responsibility. I can't imagine that Charlie Whiting has the sole responsibility to the whole race. I think that it must be some kind of race committee or something. But someone or some people have to make a decision, and basically they are afraid of taking the responsibility to maybe cause an accident, to say it like that.
Yeah, but I think when you're in that situation, it's obviously difficult, but what Formula One has worked on for the past 20 years or so is driver safety, and safety all around. And I think if there was any sort of, if any of the people who were making that decision had any doubt, had any feeling that something, that a driver could be injured, then, you know, why keep the race going? I mean, of course, it's not what we want. It's not like I want to see racing, but if that comes at the expense of a driver being injured, then, you know, what's the point? And I know whenever drivers step into cars, racing cars, it is dangerous, but why add an extra element of danger when it's not needed? And it's a shame that it's come from past experiences, and we've had to learn from mistakes for this to happen. But I think they were just preventing any possibility of the heartbreak that Formula One suffered when we lost Jules Bianchi.
Yeah, and I mean, in the end, it was all right, because we had the full 71 laps, and we got 1 hour more of Formula One or something. So
yeah, it was, at the end of the day, it was a great show. So.
Yes, we can't complain about that. And as you said, with a car spinning across the track just before the red flag, maybe it really was the best decision. But yeah, going a few laps, or not a few laps, just after the red flags, Verstappen was behind Rosberg. And actually, what was Rosberg doing at the restart every time? Was it just trying to avoid the spray or what? Because it seemed like he always wanted to stay away from Hamilton.
Yeah, I was kind of, I didn't really understand that. I guess my only understanding is, but this doesn't really make sense, because what I would think is that he was expecting, certainly the first restart, he was expecting Hamilton to go up to not bolt until he was further up the line or further up the hill in sector 3. And not only was he backing away from Hamilton, but he was also inviting the Red Bulls and the Ferraris on him, especially Verstappen, on the back of him. And yeah, I didn't get what he was doing, to be honest. I mean,
it must have been intentional, because he really had a lot of time to see what's going on, and he was really, what was it, 3 car lengths or so behind Hamilton, and he kept the gap.
Yeah, I mean, I actually don't know what to say, because I really don't know why he just wasn't closer. I'm stumped on that one.
Maybe we can talk about that later on, because I've got a little bit of a theory what's going on with him. But let's keep talking about Rosberg. Verstappen actually didn't drop back. He was not that close behind to overtake him on the straight, but in turn 3 after the Senna SS, it was the first of many, many great moves. He just picked the outside line and drove cleanly around Rosberg. I mean, that was just awesome.
Yeah, I think we have a new rain master. Michael Schumacher was always hailed for being a rain master. And it's always said that the best drivers prevail in the rain. They show their true racing ability when they're racing in the wet. And yeah, Verstappen, he even said before the Grand Prix that he loves wet conditions, and yesterday he proved that in the race. And what I thought was pretty cool when he went around, all the overtakes that he was doing and all the lines that he was taking, they were very kart like. They were karting lines. They weren't Formula One lines. And I think that's, I mean, only what, 3 years ago, 4 years ago, he was racing karts. So yeah, he's kind of kept that with him, and it just goes to show that racing karts really does stick with a driver, and it still remains roots of their racing abilities.
Yes, but really, as you said, he found lines where I didn't even believe there were lines. You know, some I don't know where he found all the grip. It was really amazing to watch. And as you said, maybe he learned or he kept a lot from his karting days.
Yeah, and like when he was coming up the hill in Sector 3, he would always go to the outside, and
yeah.
I was like tensing up, waiting for a big crash whenever I seen that. But yeah, somehow he just managed to find grip.
apart from one time where he didn't find grip, and we just saw him going 90 degrees with 250 kph or something.
Yeah, that was pretty scary. he saved it so well, though. I mean, hats off to him. He did so well.
He said afterwards, yeah, it was 50% skill, 50% luck. In my opinion, it was a lot more skill, because he could really see. At first, he just managed to get the car stopped, let's say it like that. And just at the right moment, he really released the brakes and steered the car so that it was parallel to the barriers to avoid them. I mean, it was really very well done.
Yeah, because normally when you... If in dry conditions, when you spin, you'll see drivers put their foot on the brake in order to stay out of the barriers. But when you're in the wet, it's a much different situation, because if you stick your foot right down on the brake, you're just going to skid because there's no grip anyway.
Yeah.
So you need to release your foot off the brake and just hope that the car finds its grip. And yeah, he did that, and yeah, fair play to him.
And the team radio was also gold. What did he say? My heartbeat
went up a little bit there.
Yeah. Or how Jeremy Clarkson would say, "Oh, a little poo came out."
Yeah. I mean, he's just so calm. Like, he's just unbelievably calm for someone that's only 19 years age. And
you just have to remember that.
If he's able to do that at 19 years of age, God knows what he's going to be able to do in 5, 6, 7 years time.
Maybe we only have to wait 1 year.
Maybe.
But yeah, that's a topic for another whole episode, I think. he went for P2 then. Again, Rosberg being on the shy side and not really doing anything there. And Verstappen decided to pit again for the intermediate tires. I think Ricardo did it as well. I mean, I think Red Bull thought their only chance to beat Mercedes was to go for another strategy. And well, in the end, you must say maybe it was, because otherwise I think there was no chance really to get by at least Hamilton to win the race.
Well, you never know. I think Verstappen had a pretty good chance of winning the race if he stuck it out in the wet. But of course, in hindsight, it's, you know, you're always able to work out what the best solution was. But yeah, he pitted for the inters and dropped back, way back in the field. P15, I believe it was, or P16. And yeah, at that moment, I thought it was all over for him, really.
I think that was the second stop. I think with the first stop he just came out P5 or something. That was okay. But the bad thing only happened after the next safety car.
Oh,
or something.
Yes, you're right. Yeah. Sorry about that.
But before that, just coming back to Rosberg, he wasn't, fully in the game as well, to say it like that. Also coming up the hill, he also really nearly managed to crash the car, and also a very fine save, you have to say. Did you see it on board?
Yeah, I did see it, and I think if Verstappen's heartbeat went up a little bit, then Rosberg must have went up much more. I think his championship flashed before his eyes there when he did that.
Yeah.
And yeah, it was a good save, and I think at the end of the day, I think Rosberg will be fairly satisfied with P2.
After that moment, certainly.
Yeah,
it
could have been, his race could have been much, much worse than that.
Just imagine, with such a little mistake.
Well, actually, do you know what? If he had crashed out, I was actually thinking of this. If he had crashed out in that race, then I think the championship lead would be 6 points to Hamilton, which would mean that whichever driver won the race in Abu Dhabi would be crowned world champion. That would have been exciting, of course.
Yeah,
that would have been pretty exciting. But yeah, I think Rosberg will be pretty happy with his result at the end of the day. Of course, he didn't win, but he didn't lose either. in some respect.
And then, yeah, after that we had, I think, one of the most emotional scenes of the whole season, maybe of the past few years, where also end of sector 3, also Massa got some oversteer aquaplaning, hit the wall, and basically the car stopped nearly in the same position as Ericsson in front of the main grandstand. And yeah, it was so sad actually to see, because it was his last home race. I heard he was really looking forward to the lap in at the end of the race to wave everyone goodbye and so on, and yeah, then he didn't manage to do it. But in the end, I think this was an even more emotional moment than anything could have ever been.
You said it could have been one of the most emotional moments in the past few years, but to be honest, I think it could be one of the most emotional moments ever in Formula One. I mean, Massa, he's had such a prolonged career. He's been in Formula One for a long time now, and he's achieved so much. Sure, he doesn't have a world championship, but I think he has 11 wins and 40-something podiums. And yeah, and not only does he have that success, but he is so respected around the paddock. You know, there's no one that doesn't like Felipe Massa, and you can't not like Felipe Massa. You know, he's just that kind of guy. And
yeah,
it was a shame to see him crash out of his final home Grand Prix. But I think that send off that he got is an iconic moment, not just for the race, not just for his career, but for Formula One as a whole. It still shows the sense of community and respect that is in Formula One, because when he was walking back down the paddock, of course, Mercedes and Ferrari all came out to give him a guard of honour and applaud him. And yeah, it was pretty beautiful to see, actually, because you don't see anything like that anymore in F1. And yeah, it brought a smile to everyone's face, and maybe a tear to a few eyes.
Yeah, it was so nice, really. And yeah, it was lucky that, or we were lucky that everything fell into place there. I mean, the pit lane was closed, so everyone could be in the pit lane and walk up and down the pit lane. So yeah, I think someone wanted this to happen, maybe.
Yeah, well, it would have been a disaster if like one of the Mercedes or Ferraris came into pit, and yeah, that would have been
Ricardo again. Ricardo again missed the call again.
Yeah. Yeah, but yeah, it was a really nice send off for Massa. Of course, he still has another Grand Prix. It'd be his 250th race. But yeah, that was very nice to witness at his last home Grand Prix.
Yeah, and was there the next red flag, or when was the other red flag? I can't just remember it.
Safety car.
Yeah, certainly. Okay. The safety car came out, and well, at least it was another red flag for sure. Of course, sure. It's the favorite word of Massa.
Yeah.
For sure. And yeah, I think then was the biggest part of the booing of the fans, where they stopped the race, although the track was good. And after that, when they restarted behind the safety car, I think Verstappen was still out on the intermediates, and then they decided, no, it's not worth it, the rain is getting worse, and they had to pit again. Isn't that right?
Do you know what? With so much going on in that Grand Prix, it's actually just, at this point, it's impossible to tell.
Yeah, but it was something like that. Verstappen pitted for new full wet tires.
Oh, he pitted for wets,
yeah. Yeah, Ricciardo did it two laps before or something.
I think so, something like that. But yeah, like I said, Verstappen pitted and it put him down to nowhere, really.
P15, I think you were quite right there.
Yeah.
Yes, and then we saw the biggest overtaking show of the year, of the century. I mean, that was just awesome to watch.
Yeah, I think it was something like 13 overtakes in 16 laps, I think, which is just phenomenal, especially in the conditions that we were in.
And again, you just... I was sitting in front of the TV and just asking myself, where does this boy find the grip? I mean, it was just amazing, really.
Yeah, it was just phenomenal.
Yeah, and there were some overtakes that were more exciting than others. First of all, there was the fight with Vettel, for example, the fight began at the beginning of the lap where he tried to overtake Vettel on the outside into turn 4, and Vettel basically pushed him off the track, but Verstappen was clever enough to back out of it and try it later. And then at the end of the lap, Verstappen went to the inside, did the same thing as Vettel did, but Vettel thought to go around the outside would be a good idea, even though there was no space.
And then
naturally he complained. I mean,
honestly, like right after he overtook him, I knew that Vettel would be on that radio complaining. Yeah. But no, Verstappen, he didn't do anything wrong. I mean, yes, he was aggressive, but I think that can be put down to, well, the fact that he's Max Verstappen and he's aggressive anyway. But also the conditions as well, I think, somewhat played a part in that. But I think didn't Vettel push Alonso off the track?
Yeah,
earlier in the race.
And did you read Alonso's comments about that?
Yeah, I said he'd hit him next time. So I think Vettel is just one of those people that doesn't like to receive what is done unto him.
I mean, he isn't used to it. I mean, for 3 years he was just always P1 and just drove away from the pack. He doesn't know what it is to fight.
And I think that's a problem that Martin Brundle, I think, said it was. It's either Brundle or Johnny Herbert said it, that they don't think that Vettel will be in the sport for too much longer. By going by the ages of current drivers that are nearing the end of their careers, you could say that Vettel has another 6-7 years left in him for racing in F1, but they think he could leave when his contract at Ferrari expires next year, because he's just not in a good place at all in F1, because like you said, he at Red Bull he enjoyed so much success, and then this move to Ferrari, it looked in 2015, it didn't, well, it started off pretty well, and then it became clear that Ferrari wouldn't be challenging for the title, and then everyone was like, okay, 2016 will be Ferrari's year, and they dropped even further behind.
Yeah, I think we talked about it in a previous episode, and I think he has his reasons to quit the sport, but he also said he knew that it would be a huge challenge to bring Ferrari back to the way of victory, but yeah, I'm not sure. Personally, I don't think that he will quit, but obviously there is a chance.
Yeah, there's a chance, but I don't think he will either. I think for the sake of the sport, Ferrari will make some gains next year. I'm certainly expecting Red Bull to make some gains next year, but hopefully for the sport's sake, and you know, perhaps his as well, for all the people who like Vettel out there, which there is a lot of. That Ferrari will make a good car.
Also, you have to say, with all the radio calls, he just proves actually the opposite. I mean, he shows the emotion he has for the sport and for what he's doing. So, I mean, for me, that indicates kind of the opposite. If you look at Jenson Button, however, who is more like, yeah, I don't care, whatever, only one qualifying left. I mean, that's more kind of an attitude when you want to retire or something, you know?
Yes, what you think that the passion that he shows still in the case that he cares about the sport.
Yeah,
I agree.
Yeah. So at the end, it was then the overtake of Verstappen on Perez, which was also a bit nervy for Verstappen or Red Bull fans, because he accelerated on the curbs and he went sideways just when he was aside of Perez, which was a bit interesting.
You said it was a nervy moment for Verstappen and Red Bull fans. It was a nervy moment for me because although I try to stay unbiased, I do like Force India,
yeah,
as I've stated before. And I was hoping Perez could get some good points out of it. But yeah, in the end, Verstappen, he just, again, he was right up on the curb, and that's a dangerous place to be when it was as wet as it was. And again, he did get a lot of oversteer, but controlled it well. Didn't hit Perez. They went side by side through the penultimate corner, and yeah, it was another very nice overtake to add to his collection.
Yeah, definitely. So in the end, Hamilton won the race. Best result possible for him, of course. He did all he needed to do to, make the championship go on until Abu Dhabi. Rosberg can be happy, really, to finish P2. Nothing, as you said, he didn't win, but also he didn't lose. And I mentioned something earlier. In my opinion, maybe also for Mexico, in my opinion, Rosberg attends a race to where it is okay to finish P2. Do you have the same feeling?
He, again, of course he wants to win, but
do you think so?
I think, yeah, of course he does.
In my opinion, he just thinks, well, Hamilton is in front, I don't really want to fight him. In the end, I might break a front wing or something, I'll just stay in second.
Yeah, well, I think at this later stage of the year, he's more thinking about the World Championship now. Well, he's definitely thinking about the World Championship now because there's only one race left. He will be happy. He will be relatively happy with P2 or P3, whatever he needs to get. But he'd be so much happier if he was able to win the races.
Yeah, of course.
And I mean, there's no reason why he would decide just to hang back and not attack. I mean, of course, he doesn't need to. But, you know, why wouldn't he when it's his teammate, especially? He wants to get the better of his teammate no matter what the cost is, whether it be a world championship or just a race victory or a podium or a final point. He wants to beat him no matter what. And yeah, in that respect, I think he does want to win. But of course, he is focusing on the world championship more at this stage.
Yeah, I think you're correct there. It was just a theory, which could be true, but
Of course, at the end of the day, it's only Rosberg himself who knows.
Yeah,
so.
we can speculate about it all the day long, but won't make any difference. So yeah, and as I said, of course, good races for Perez and also for Sainz, finishing P6. But the unsung hero, or not really unsung, but really the heroes of the Brazilian GP was the Sauber team.
Yeah. What a surprise, actually, because no one expected that at all. And what was even better for Nasr was it was at his home Grand Prix.
Yeah.
And that meant it. Did you hear his team radio after?
No, sadly not.
It was pretty great to listen to. He was
wasn't it?
He was very, very, very happy. he was screaming his head off in the cockpit. But it's a good result for them. They finished without any points in 2014, I believe. And
possibly.
2015, of course, they got points back, and then this year they were looking to finish bottom of the pile again. And yeah, this pretty much could have saved them. Of course, there is still another Grand Prix to go, but the chances of Sauber and Manor getting points at that track are going to be slim. But yeah, they could have just saved Sauber a lot of problems and perhaps put Manor into a lot more.
Yeah, I think it saved them about $30 million or something. Yeah. Better than any pay driver.
yeah, definitely. And I think the way the complicated pay system works is you get your money over how you performed in over 3 years or something like that. And of course, in 2014, they didn't score any points at all. So those 2 points were very, very vital for Sauber.
Yeah, and it was actually quite funny. During the race, during the red flag, I actually tweeted, oh, Manor and P8 and P9, they should prepare champagne or something. And then after that, a few minutes after that, I checked the table again and I saw, Sauber in P6 or P5? That's not good for them.
Yeah. And in the end, the Manors didn't score any points at all. Verlaine just completely dropped away to, I think he finished P15 out of 16, and
Could it be a reason that Ocon got a seat at another team? We might talk about that next week.
Yeah, I think we should probably leave that one for next week because that could add on another 10 or 15 minutes. So.
I don't know. Just tune in next week. We'll talk about the driver markets and where Ocon will be next year. So yeah, bad for Manor, but Ocon, very good drive, I think. Yeah.
He stayed in the points for a long time actually, and was holding on for a while until the likes of Alonso and Bottas got by him. And I mean, I think he was only something like 1.4, 1.5 seconds away from Fernando Alonso, who finished in 10th. Yeah. So yeah, they got close, but unfortunate for them that it looks like they're going to be finishing outside the top 10 once again.
And it was just as you mentioned, Fernando Alonso. It basically was a race to forget for McLaren. For Alonso being pushed out by Vettel, spinning the way up out of the last turn, Button. I don't know what happened to him. Yep. He was so unhappy with the car the whole weekend.
Yeah, I mean, if you say it's a race to forget for Alonso, I mean, at least he scored a point.
Yeah.
Jenson Button was over 21 seconds away from... Button finished in 16th, and he was 21 seconds away from Verlaine in 15th. That goes to show what kind of race he had.
He didn't even spin, so it was just a pure lack of pace of the car.
Yeah, and I'm hoping that he can have a somewhat more justified final race in Abu Dhabi for a very successful career. Yeah. It would be a shame for him to drop out on a race like that. So I'll be hoping that he has a much more better race in Abu Dhabi.
Yeah, and I don't even think some people realize that it might really be his last race of his whole career, because of course he says that he might come back in 2 years or something, but I honestly don't really believe it.
Yeah, I absolutely... Well, I believe that the option is there, but I don't think he will. I think McLaren will produce a good car next year.
I hope so.
Perhaps knocking on the doors of a podium every now and again.
Yeah.
Similar maybe to their car in 2014, that kind of pace. And I think it will be enough to convince Van Dorn and Alonso to stay for at least another year, in which the next year after that they'll have a pretty competitive car. But that's just my opinion, and I'm probably going to be 100% wrong.
Well, I absolutely agree with what you say.
There's two people.
Yeah, I expect them even to do a little bit better, because, I mean, they had, in my opinion, they developed the new car for the whole season. So who knows? Who knows what they can do next season? But we talked a long, long time now over the Brazilian GP, because, I mean, there was just things happening everywhere. But yeah, let's go to the next segment of the podcast. Driver of the weekend. We discuss which driver showed the best performances in practice, quali, and race. Well, actually, this is kind of a joke. I mean, do we really have to discuss who is the driver of the weekend? Not really. Or would you?
I'm gonna go for Daniel Kvyat. That's a joke.
because he managed Palmer to crash into him.
Yeah, I just picked a random driver from the list that I'm looking at here. No, of course it's only gonna be one man. I qualified his teammate and produced one of the best drives I think Formula One has ever seen. Yeah. In its 60 whatever years of Grand Prix racing. Phenomenal race from Verstappen, and a real insight to what kind of pace he has and what kind of driver he is. So well done, Max Verstappen. For the first time in a long time, he won the driver of the day when he fully deserved it.
I voted for him as well. I saw some people voting for Felipe Massa, which I thought was also a good choice because I mean he really deserved it. It was a special race for him. But at the end, I think the majority just decided to vote for Verstappen, which was, as you said, a very good decision. And I think one of the happiest people in Brazil was possibly Helmut Marko, who made a decision to promote him to the Red Bull team.
Yeah, I mean, after a race like that, it's hard not to acknowledge his performance. And he's been, he's been criticised. Of course, he started the season, after the Spanish Grand Prix, it was all looking so well. And then at Belgium and so on after that, he was kind of criticised. But I think and a lot of people lost a lot of respect for him after his defensive antics, but I think yesterday people kind of they have mass respect for him. I know I do after watching his performance yesterday, because he did a very, very good job.
Well, I was a fan of him from the beginning because I just love this aggressive style of racing. Of course, some people don't agree with what he's doing, but I just think he brings just so much more excitement to Formula One, and I really like that.
Yeah, well, as you know, I don't take sides, and there isn't a driver that I want to win
the
championship.
Me neither, but I really like that he brings some new style, some new excitement to Formula One, you know? I really appreciate that.
Yeah. No, I was saying, though, that like I definitely don't want one driver to win the championship. There's not a driver that I think should win the championship. Rosberg. Just saying, though, you know. I'm not biased at all, though. I'm not biased.
Yeah, but that's another thing we could talk about another hour, you know. But in the end, I would wish Rosberg to win the championship, but in the end, I wouldn't complain if Hamilton would win it either. Because,
yeah, absolutely.
You know, he just shows that he's a very good driver time and time again.
Yeah, he's one of the best of all time. I mean, he passed Alan Prost's record for the second most amount of wins in a career. So, whoever has the most points at the end of the season and whoever wins the title deserves the title.
Yeah, I think that's good to end on the driver of the day. I think we've got a lot to talk about that next week. But before we come to that, we've got our comment of the week section. Comment of the week. Get featured on the show by telling us your opinion. Well, last week, Sid Motorsport, that's Sid who was on the podcast as well some episodes ago, he commented on the podcast that we had before the Brazilian GP and said, I doubt that Rosberg will win the championship in Brazil. And well, Sid, you're absolutely right. He didn't win it. And yeah, I was kind of thinking he might be able to win it, but yeah, with those circumstances, he didn't want to risk it. We talked about it earlier. Yeah, but thank you very much for your comment. If you want to send us a comment, you can comment us. You can comment on Facebook, on YouTube, or send us an email at info@thesimracer.com. So we really look forward to your comments and your opinion. And yeah, there's now one race to go. One race until we find out who will be the champion. And also, we've got a lot to talk about in terms of the driver market. So, Fergal, do you look forward to next week's episode?
I very much look forward to it, and I hope to see everyone else here again and listening to us.
Yeah, and next week there will be some kind of new stuff, because we will try to to engage more of you, of our listeners, and so we will try to do some kind of live podcast. So everything will be as normal, but we will broadcast it live on my Facebook page, the Facebook page The Sim Racer. And if you are interested in giving your comment about the championship battle, what will happen in Abu Dhabi, and so on, feel free to check out my Facebook page next Sunday evening. I'll post an event update for that. And so I hope we can discuss with a lot of you guys. So see you then. Wherever you are listening, we would really appreciate your feedback by commenting or rating the podcast. Thank you very much for listening. We will be back next week. Goodbye.
Goodbye.